NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live from Montana, day four of our trip here to Montana. And the news today is absolutely out there. We've got probably the most bizarre but compelling set of headlines we've had on the show in a while. Don Lemon goes on CNN, after it fires him, to complain about his new boss, Elon Musk. Okay, we'll get to that. That'll be really fun with the guys from Ruthless who are coming up. Plus, we're going to dive into new polling that shows absolutely zero bump for President Biden after his big State of the Union address. Wait, the yelling didn't work? What do you mean? I thought that mainstream media told us this was like the thing that was going to turn it all around. Well, the latest polls show Trump has gone up, if anything. But first, as the nation awaits Fulton County Superior Judge Scott McAfee's decision on whether to disqualify Fannie Willis from prosecuting former President Donald Trump, among others, the judge issued a different blockbuster ruling yesterday. And I'm sure you heard about this, maybe on some other news sources. He dismissed six counts of the indictment against some of the Trump defendants. It dismissed three against Trump. And what's really interesting, because the case still lives against Trump and the others in Atlanta, but that decision may provide some tea leaves regarding which way he's leaning on Fannie. It's not 100% clear. I'll just outline the ruling just a little bit. And then joining me one second is going to be Alan Dershowitz. But basically, he said that Fannie and Nathan failed to draft an indictment that really stated an adequate cause that the defendants could understand in six of the counts. They were supposed to provide them notice with what they were being charged with, and it was a violation of the Constitution. Yeah. Well, said Judge McAfee, you're going to have to be a little bit more specific than that, because that could include hundreds of provisions in the Constitution, and that's inadequate drafting. So those counts are now gone, though if Fannie Willis or whoever's prosecuting this case wants to try to go back in front of another grand jury and get them reindicted, more carefully drafted, she can. That's required under Georgia law. Under federal law, you could just redraft your indictment. But under Georgia law, the judge pointed out, you have to go all the way back in front of a new grand jury. And right now, the whole case is paused as they're dealing with the disqualification issue. And that's where I want to begin with my first guest today. Do you owe back taxes? Pandemic relief is now over. Along with hiring thousands of new agents and field officers, the IRS has kicked off 2024 by sending over 5 million pay-up letters to those who have unfiled tax returns or balances owed. Oh, joy. Don't waive your rights and speak with them on your own. Tax Network USA, a trusted tax relief firm, has saved over $1 billion in back taxes for their clients, and they can help you secure the best deal possible. Whether you owe $10,000 or $10 million, they can help you. Whether it's business or personal taxes, even if you have the means to pay or you're on a fixed income, they can help finally resolve your tax burdens once and for all. Call 1-800-245-6000 for a private, free consultation, or visit tnusa.com/Megyn. Professor Emeritus of Harvard Law School and host of the Dersh Show podcast, Alan Dershowitz. Professor, great to have you here. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, but really it's the judge who's on trial now. Everybody in America knows that Fannie Willis and her boyfriend and her witness lied. The real issue was whether they should be prosecuted, disbarred, prosecuted for perjury, for conspiracy, for obstruction of justice. Nobody watching those testimony could believe a word of that. I mean, you have these pings of the cell towers showing that he's near her house at 10 o'clock at night, that he leaves at 4 in the morning. They were not playing Scrabble. And this was well before she hired him at $700,000. If this judge believes them, it will really disturb the interests of justice. Everybody knows that they're lying, and therefore there is a real conflict of interest. But I suspect the judge is not going to have the courage to find that. Maybe he'll find an apparent conflict or a possible conflict or an appearance, but that may not be enough under Georgia law. So it's Georgia that's on trial now. It's the judge who's on trial, and we're a long way from Donald Trump and his co-defendants being on trial. It's really a funny Willis who's on trial and the judge.
Yeah, we certainly are. I mean, eventually, maybe we'll get back to Donald Trump if she survives and if her case survives eventually, but it's not going to be pre-election at this point. So let me ask you about this, Professor. Paul Sperry, he gets a lot of scoops. We've had him on the show before. He does these deep investigations for Real Clear. And he's sent out a couple of tweets citing a source close to the judge. Now, we don't know whether this person actually is in a position to know what the judge is thinking, but the second tweet, we brought the first one to our audience last week, the second Paul Sperry tweet reads as follows. Judge McAfee views cell phone data and the Terrence Bradley texts as suggestive but not dispositive or as enough proof to settle the matter, according to an Atlanta attorney familiar with his thinking. Texts provide no insight into how Terrence Bradley would know, meaning that they had an affair long before 2022. Did he see them? Wade told him. Now, that is an interesting thought, that the judge is getting ready to dismiss evidence of the cell phone data, the many texts between these two long before they admit their affair took place, and the middle of the night visits, as the texts seem to suggest, and so on. And also Bradley's texts to Nathan Wade or to Ashley Merchant saying, you know, it began well before, because he's saying the texts don't actually show Bradley had personal knowledge of it. Could have been speculation. Well, if any of that is true, how do you see it?
That's just dead wrong. There are people on death row. I have a client in prison on far, far less compelling evidence of pings and tweets and cell towers. She put people in prison based on that. If this judge doesn't conclude beyond any doubt that there was an improper relationship, also, is there any doubt that she never paid back the money? What lawyer who has to comply with ethics rules would ever not have a record of paying back money? You have bank deposits, withdrawals, you have a photograph of the money being paid. But for her to make up a story that she paid the money back and has one piece of evidence that once she paid for a wine tasting with cash, there are so many people in prison for long term on less evidence than that. If this judge doesn't believe that or says he doesn't believe it, he wouldn't be telling the truth. I can tell you with 100% certainty that this judge sitting there knows absolutely that this affair occurred before, that the money wasn't paid back, that they committed perjury, that they conspired to commit perjury. But judges sometimes pretend that they don't believe testimony or believe testimony in order to spare themselves. He doesn't want to look the elected DA in the eye and say, you're a perjurer, you should be in prison. But there's absolutely no doubt that there's enough here to disqualify. And if he doesn't disqualify, this whole case will be subject to all kinds of criticism, not only in the court of public opinion, but in the courts of law as well. I hope the judge does the right thing, but I've said from the beginning, I don't think he will. I don't think he has the guts. Yeah. I don't think he has the courage to tell the truth. And I think he'll find a way to weasel out of this thing, to say, oh, well, the cell tower, who are you going to believe? Me or your lying eyes? Look, she and he had an affair before they were appointed. That is absolutely clear. And her testimony under oath is perjury. The evidence is overwhelming as to that. And if the judge pretends not to believe it, there's a bridge in Brooklyn that I could sell him as well. But judges do that all the time. You know, cops arrest people. They say the drug dealer dropped the drugs on the floor. That's lie number 7 on the list of 10 lies. Dropsy testimony. And I've looked in the eyes of judges and they say, well, we believe this testimony. And then, you know, 2 years later, after court, you talk to the judge, and they'll say, of course I never believed it. Of course I knew he was lying. But I, you know, the person was guilty, and I just didn't want the person to get off. Judges play that game all the time. And if this judge tries to play that game now, a lot of lawyers and a lot of people like you and me are going to be after him, because it will be a disgrace to the judicial system if she's allowed to continue. It's a disgrace to the legal system if she's not disbarred and not put in jail. And I hope the people of Fulton County have enough sense to throw her out of office, at least when it comes to an election.
All right, a couple of questions on that. Could the judge, because I do want to talk about what import we glean from the dismissal of those six counts. I mean, but let me just table that for 1 second. Table it for 1 second and ask you, do you think there's a way in which this judge could say, I'm not going to kick her off this case. I'm not going to maybe even kick Nathan Wade off the case, though I think, you know, most people agree he's probably gone. But let's say he says, I'm not going to kick them off the case. Any disciplinary matters involving their misleading of this court really are a matter for the bar. And so I don't approve of it. I don't like it, but I don't see his grounds for disqualification. This is really just an ethical matter for the bar.
He could say that. That would be a cop-out, but he could say that. And also, I think his dismissal of the six counts basically was a message by, see, I'm fair. I don't rule in favor of her every time. I took that dismissal of the six counts as a signal that he was not going to disqualify the whole office. Otherwise, he would have waited to see whether the new office was going to stand by that or maybe reindict. So I think that your source is probably correct. And, you know, I think it was Levin on Fox News who called me the Nostradamus of lawyers, because I get my predictions right all the time, because I don't make predictions based on wishful thinking. So my prediction here is that he's going to figure out a way of not completely and totally disqualifying them. Maybe he'll say there's an appearance, but the appearance isn't enough under the law. But whatever he says, if he suggests that you can believe anything she said, he should not be on the bench, because he would not be telling the truth. He does not believe her. I guarantee you, he's smart enough. Do you know anybody who actually, even CNN, many of their legal commentators who were always wrong, say they didn't believe her. They didn't believe him. It's not enough here to disqualify, but we don't believe her. If you don't believe her, she's committed perjury. And if you don't believe both of them, they've committed perjury, obstruction of justice, and conspiracy to commit perjury. Again, let me emphasize one more time. She put people in prison on less evidence than is now against her. What hypocrisy.
All right. So the judge issues this decision dismissing six counts of the indictment. I agree. My first instinct when I saw it was he's trying to show I did something that was good for Trump. And then maybe later this week, he's going to say, and I did something that was good for Trump's prosecutor by keeping Fannie Willis on the case. I think we can probably glean he's definitely not going to grant the motion to dismiss this case entirely because of Fannie's alleged conflict. Because why else would he be reducing six counts from it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the
so
right
that's
decision.
Not,
I don't
the
think
case is not going to go away.
Case. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So that's that. Here's another thing that we found this soundbite from the judge speaking with the local radio station last week. And he was being asked, Alan, about his new left wing challenger to his judge seat, which he's now got to run for re-election on. He was unchallenged. And then at the last minute, this guy who's from the Rainbow Push Jesse Jackson Coalition throws his hat in the ring and he's now challenging him from the left. And he was asked about that and how, if at all, it might weigh on his decision over Fannie. And here's what he said.
I've had a rough draft and an outline before I ever heard a rumor that someone wanted to run for this position. So the result is not going to change because of politics. I am calling it as best I can in the law as I understand it.
Okay. Yeah. Now, my very smart law school friend who listens to the show every day, she's a lawyer like you and I are, and she says she thinks from that, and I think she's got a good point, the only reason he would remind us that he had drafted a decision before he got the challenge from the left would be if he's about to rule that Fannie can stay on the case. Because he wouldn't need to reassure us that he had drafted anything to, you know, deal with a competitor if it was going to be against Fannie, right? Like, he wouldn't draft an opinion getting rid of Fannie in order to appease the left. So it, I think she might be onto something there, that that statement may have telegraphed he's about to rule in favor of Fannie Willis staying on the case. What do you think?
I agree with that. I think all the signs point in that direction, and all the law and the facts point in the opposite direction. But I don't think this judge is going to do justice in this case. I think he is going to figure out a way of not having her disqualified. Look, the worst thing
that ever
happened
to her. What about Nathan Wade? Yeah, I know you won't go as far as say Fannie in the office, but what about Nathan Wade?
That's easy. He could say, look, the appearance of justice, I recommend strongly that he be taken off the case so that the appearance of injustice disappears. That would be an easy call for him, but it would have no impact on the case. Look, the worst thing that ever happened to American judicial system is election of judges, election of prosecutors. We're the only country in the world, the Western world, that elects judges and prosecutors. And the politics, obviously, play a role in all of these decisions. So, but I agree with your friend. I think she's very insightful that that statement suggests that he is not going to rule in favor of Donald Trump on the disqualification. Again, that's my judgment. I don't have enough to make a firm prediction, but I hope he rules the other way, but I often predict against my own wishes. So that's my that's my prediction.
All right. Yeah. So let's get ahead of ourselves a bit and say he keeps her on the case, irrespective of what happens with Nathan Wade, that he keeps Fannie Willis on the case. What happens as a realistic matter in now her prosecution against Donald Trump and these defendants, now that the whole nation has had quite an introduction to this woman and her ethical bar?
Well, first of all, it becomes a big appellate issue. Second of all, good trial lawyers could try to figure out a way of getting her credibility somehow in front of the jury. It's not an easy thing to do. But the American public does not believe Fannie Willis. They don't believe she's a truth teller. And if I'm a defense attorney, I try to take as much advantage of that in every single context, both the trial and on appeal. So she's become a big issue now in this case. If she had been smart, she just would have recused herself, not the office, just recused herself and recused him and said, this is bigger than both of us. Let's get on with this. But she has an enormous ego. The fact that she volunteered the testimony and bolted into the courtroom and began to tell what I regard as lie after lie after lie shows, I think, what kind of a person she is. And I would not be proud of that.
How do you see her breaches? Like, what's the worst one? Taking money, you know, taking these trips from a guy she brought in who she's paying more than the other prosecutors? Or is it the lying under oath? How would you rank her alleged sins?
It's not even a close question. It's perjury, conspiracy to commit perjury, obstruction of justice. And the perjury involves her having an affair. The affair itself, I think she could have explained and justified. Accepting money, no. And the idea that she was willing to allow people to accuse her of taking money by not keeping records of payback. Remember, she has an obligation under the code of professional and judicial responsibility. She has the burden of proving to them that she didn't take any money. And that, remember, there is proof that she took money, as the judge found. Proof by cell phone records and by American Express records. Then the burden should shift to her to prove that she paid back, and she can't satisfy that burden by merely saying, I paid everything back to the penny. Reasonably people would not believe that. I certainly don't believe it.
And why, you know, part of the thing that's bothering me is some of her defenders are trying to pretend that this judge can't find that she perjured herself or that she took these unethical kickbacks unless he can find so by beyond any reasonable doubt. You know, using the criminal justice standard.
Wrong.
I don't think that's right. I think the judge has got plenty in front of him to find she did take the kickbacks. She did not pay cash. I disbelieve her testimony. And I also believe this Robin Yerty, the longtime friend of Fannie Willis, who took the stand and said under oath, they were having an affair going back to 2019. She told me, and I saw it with my own two eyes. Yes, she got fired or pushed out of the office by Fannie. But is the mere fact that she got pushed out of the office enough to totally discount her testimony? And are they using the right burden in assessing the case that has to be made?
Totally wrong burden. And remember, you can just quote Fannie Willis. She testified under oath. She said, it's my testimony that I paid the money back in cash, and that's enough evidence. She herself said the testimony of one person is enough evidence, and she's right about that if it's credible and believable. There's just too much here to allow a judge in good faith to say he believes her testimony, he believes Wade's testimony, he believes the other testimony. It's just not credible, and he doesn't have to find it beyond reasonable doubt. All he has to do is find it at the most by a preponderance. In fact, I would imagine a judge saying, look, there's enough evidence here for there to be enough doubt about the integrity of the judicial system that on balance, it's far better to err on the side of disqualifying her than allowing her to continue when there might well have been an actual conflict of interest. Yes. That would be the right allocation of burden. But, that's not what's going to happen. This judge doesn't have the courage to do this.
He's very young. He's only 34. He is a Republican. He's a Kemp-appointed Republican. But if he doesn't win this election, he's out of a job. So, you know, and it's 72%. It's almost 73% for Joe Biden this county. So he's,
I just hope if he rules that she's telling the truth, I hope he's out of a job. That would be my vote if I were down there. Yeah.
He doesn't seem like that much of a partisan hack, but we don't know him that well. All right, let me get you, before I let you go, to comment. I don't know if you saw this breaking news on Chuck Schumer.
Yeah.
Highest-ranking Jewish official in the United States calling for new elections in Israel. I've never seen this happen before. He's calling for new elections in Israel. He's describing Netanyahu as, quote, an obstacle to peace, urging Israel to do better. Here's the bit of that soundbite.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past. 5 months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
This is extraordinary. Your reaction?
Well, it's just wrong. It would be as if the Israeli government said we need elections in New York to oust Schumer. Look, the only major barrier to peace other than Hamas is the Biden administration. If the Biden administration had said from day one, we are supporting Israel, we understand that Hamas uses human shields, we understand they put babies in harm's way deliberately, and we support Israel, and we're not going to support Hamas, we're going to tell Hamas, you surrender, you give up the hostages. If the Biden administration had been strong there, the war would be over today. The only reason that Sinwar and the Hamas reject the ceasefires and want to continue on this, because they think they're winning support among Americans and in the U.S. administration. Now, Americans overwhelmingly support Israel, but the Biden administration is out of touch. And the only country, the only administration that needs replacement is the Biden administration if you want to see peace in the Middle East. Let Israelis decide their election. Let Americans decide their election. And let each side keep their nose out of the other side's democracy.
That's absolutely
and business.
Nuts. It really is nuts. This is the same party that's always lecturing us about norms and how we're not supposed to breach them. And yet you have this, the Senate Majority Leader out there calling for a change in government that was democratically elected. On the same note, there's today the White House had dispatched some emissaries to Chicago to meet not with Jewish people in Chicago who have become more and more under attack. More and more, we're seeing anti-Semitism rise in particular in that city. But to meet with Muslim leaders and Arab leaders. And guess what just happened? They got the back of the hand. CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, said, no, we don't want to meet with you, White House. They're mad at the White House. And this in the wake of, Alan, there's a guy on Twitter, Richard Goldberg, who's been doing a good job documenting what's happening in Chicago. He tweets out the following. Put this in perspective. Since Friday, Pro-Hamas anti-Semitic rioters in Chicago intimidated the House of Blues to cancel a Jewish singer's sold-out show, citing security concerns. Loyola University told Jewish students they could no longer allow a survivor of the Nova Music Festival massacre to speak on campus, citing security concerns. Jews were attacked while trying to enter a theater to watch footage of the Nova Music Festival massacre. Jews are not even allowed to mourn the massacres without being attacked in the city of Chicago. And what does the White House do? Send staff to meet with the Muslim representatives, who then tell the White House to bugger off, that they're not interested because they don't think the White House has been supportive enough of the Palestinians. You can't make it up.
No, of course, CARE is an organization that has supported terrorism, supported Hamas, and supported extreme anti-Israel rhetoric. It reminds me of what Canada did today. Canada said they're going to give money to rape victims, an equal number of dollars to Israeli rape victims, which we know happened during October 7th, and an equal amount to Palestinian victims of Israeli rape, even if none of them occurred. Because Canada wants to have an even-handed approach. You know, that's like giving equal amount of money to the rape victims as to the rapists. And the idea that Canada tries to be even-handed, that the American administration tries, this is not an even-handed situation.
It's just absolutely crazy what's happening. All right, last but not least, one more topic I'd like to squeeze it in, because I heard you talking about it on the Durst Show, which is a great podcast. You guys should download it. You enjoy, Alan. And you are mad right now at the NAACP for very good reason. Explain.
Well, the NAACP has said, we're not going to encourage Black athletes to play for Florida Public Universities because Florida Public Universities no longer support this abomination called DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, which is against diversity, against equality, and in favor of exclusion. The irony, though, is that the only area the NAACP does not want DEI in is athletics. Athletics are dominated by African-Americans and other, as it should be, because it's a meritocracy. You want a winning basketball team, so you pick the best people, but you also want a winning surgeon, a winning pilot, a winning engineer, and we should not have racial quotas for those more important occupations than basketball players. But the hypocrisy of the NAACP saying it's okay if basketball teams are 90% Black or football teams are 90%, we don't need diversity there, no equity there, no inclusion there. But when it comes to training engineers, training surgeons, no, we need a quota system. We need to make sure there are at least 15% of this and 8% of that, and make sure that the number of Jews and Asians particularly are kept down. You know what's happening at major universities today. The numbers of Jewish students have been cut in half by DEA, in half, sometimes more than half. And the same thing is true in other areas of life because of DEI. So although I, you know, have questions about Governor DeSantis on many areas, thankfully he was right on refusing to fund the DEI bureaucracy on public colleges. And I hope Black athletes will continue to go to public colleges. By the way, the NAACP excluded any historically Black public colleges in Florida. So it's only historically white public colleges or diverse public colleges that they don't want athletes to go to. But it's okay if the entire team is non-diverse as long as they win. But it's okay also if you train surgeons and pilots and engineers based on quota systems, not on meritocracy. Something very wrong with that.
It's crazy. Thank you so much for making the time for us this morning. I know where you are. I don't know if you want to say where you are, but I know that room you're in, sir, because it belongs to a friend of both of ours. So say hello to him. And thank
when
you for being
I was 85, it was a wonderful year. It was a wonderful year for 72-year-old women named Carolyn. Now I'm in the Frank Sinatra room. I love Frank Sinatra. I even try my best to sing him, but everybody leaves the room when I do. So here I had a captive audience. Thank you.
Great job. It's great to see you. All the best, Alan.
Likewise. Take care.
It's a wonderful room in the law office of a friend of ours. Okay, so before we go, I want to tell you that Alan's latest book is titled, as he mentioned there, War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarism. Maybe Senator Chuck Schumer should read it. Up next, the guys from Ruthless. Pure Talk is once again investing in their customers without charging an extra penny, because Pure Talk is now providing international roaming to over 50 countries. That's right. As you plan your summer travel, make sure your wireless provider has you covered at home and abroad. Pure Talk already puts you on America's most dependable 5G network, but now they're giving you coverage in over 50 countries as well. Unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. That's less than the half of what Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile will charge you. If you bring your phone, Pure Talk's eSIM technology will make switching so simple. Or you can get great savings on the latest iPhones and Androids. Consider making the switch to Pure Talk. Just go to puretalk.com/Kelly to start saving today. And when you do, you will save an additional 50% off your first month. Again, visit puretalk.com/Kelly to start saving on wireless at home and abroad. President Biden fails to get any bump whatsoever in the polls after his big State of the Union speech last week. Surprising, isn't it? According to the fixtures over at MSNBC and the like, they claimed this was a super strong moment for Mr. Biden. Remember?
I was not expecting what he did. He came out punching, forceful, strong voice. He threw boiling oil on MAGA, on Trump, on the Republicans without ever mentioning a name.
He had Frazier's left hook. This was a tour de force by Joe Biden. And in the words of Naomi Biden, doubt him, then watch him.
I thought the speech was very high caffeine. I think Joe Biden woke up this morning, had a cup of coffee and had his Wheaties. He was definitely there to fight.
This was his how about them apple speech.
Oh, boy. Here to break it all down and much, much more, Josh Holmes, Comfortably Smug, Michael Duncan, and soon John Ashbrook, who's running a little late. Together, they are the hosts of The Ruthless Program, now on YouTube at youtube.com/ruthlesspodcast. Guys, welcome back.
Hello, Megan. Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure.
The pleasure's all mine. Okay, so after all the boiling oil, Frazier's left hook, and the latest polls literally show that on the date of the State of the Union, if you look at the average and real clear, Trump was up 1.8 over Biden. As of today, Trump is up 2.1. So more. Factoring in an economist poll, Trump up 2. This is versus before the State of the Union. Daily Kos, okay, that shows Biden up 1. Yahoo, Trump up 2. Forbes, Trump up 4. Morning Consult, Trump up 1. This is all versus before the State of the Union. So nothing went Joe Biden's way. And so were they lying to us? Was it not boiling oil? Or what do you make of it?
You think maybe they could have overstated that a touch? I don't know. I felt like listening to that, I was wondering if I actually saw the State of the Union that they were. I mean, I did have a lot to drink that night. So it could be the case.
Yeah.
But I mean, my goodness, was that not boiling hot oil of any? The only bump that guy got was the B12 shot on the way in, right?
Right.
I mean, there's so like true. Absolutely nothing about it was inspiring or, you know, would have an impact on the electorate beyond what we've already seen, right, fellas?
Yeah, I mean, seeing that montage that you just played, it almost is like North Korean news coverage of their
right.
Like, dear leader was very strong. We were very impressed. Dear leader must have eaten Wheaties for breakfast. But I mean, the underlying thing is they recognize the vast, vast majority of Americans see that Joe Biden is not up to the job, that he's way over the hill. He's not all the way there.
And that's the bar, right? That's the bar that they've set for this thing. Like the fact that he didn't trip and split his pants.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, what a speech. It's Gettysburg.
Well, I mean, basically, as long as they don't roll out a casket, they're like, okay, I guess he went above what we expected.
Oh my God, I saw a Babylon Bee headline the other day. So mean, but so funny. Say something like, Biden complains that he keeps getting draped with an American flag every time he tries to take a nap.
Oh man, that's rough.
So bad. But you tell me, Duncan, because the fact that there's been absolutely no bump anywhere shows that the way we saw it was correct. This wasn't some home run. He managed to stay upright, which was like, okay, good job. And that was it. Anything else was pretty alienating to people who are on the right or in the center and did nothing for him with his base, you know, apparently, because that's not even reflected. No bump with them is reflected.
Yeah, I think it also reflects the declining interest Americans have in watching cable news.
Yeah.
It limits their ability to shape the subsequent coverage of a thing like the State of the Union. I mean, they can use all those terms that they use there, but the impact is so very small because nobody's watching anymore. Mm,
that's so
right.
True.
So, I mean, there was a time 10, 20 years ago where I think you could get more of a bump out of the State of the Union. But in our media environment today, that's so fractured. I don't think that really exists anymore. It doesn't reflect today's media landscape.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's spiraling. I'm sorry. They really are spiraling because so many Americans lost faith in the media because of the biased, one-sided coverage, and they're essentially just doubling down on it, mm-hmm. further alienating the few folks who are left with the channel stuck on MSNBC.
What a trail. That's a real sentence.
Yeah, they're really being harshly misled on a number of subjects. Okay, meantime, over on Newsmax, a more conservative-leading channel, Donald Trump sat down with my old pal, Greg Kelly, formerly of Fox News and now at Newsmax. By the way, Greg Kelly was the very first person I ever shared an office with when to Fox News, the very first person. Then I moved next door in with Major Garrett, which was one of the most formative 2 years of my young career as a reporter. Major was hilarious. So anyway, Greg Kelly sits down with the former prez and asks him about vice presidential picks, and in particular, whether he's managed to rule anybody out, which is an interesting way in on this oft-covered subject. Watch this.
Vice President, are you any closer? Have you ruled anybody out?
Yeah, I probably have a couple of people that you may know very well. Some people that I didn't think behaved properly. I think I've ruled some people out, but I've ruled a lot of people in. We have a lot of great people in the Republican Party, and they'll do a terrific job, I think. But certainly I have people that I wouldn't want as a vice president.
Is there a formal process underway right now?
No, it's a formal process. It's in my brain. It's like I look at the same people that everybody else is looking at. We've had some really great people. I think we have really great people that want it. People have expressed, I mean, not their interest. They've expressed, like, I would love to be vice president. Who wouldn't?
Okay. Now, what does he mean by he's ruled out some people who have behaved inappropriately?
Well, all I know is I could watch Donald Trump talk about his VP selection process in perpetuity for hours on it. Yep. You'd make it like pay-per-view and I would subscribe, because what's so funny about his process, first of all, there is no like formal committee. I mean, he comes out and says it. It's not like we're vetting people. It's in my brain. And I believe that.
It's in my brain.
I think that's probably true. But the best part about this and we've talked about this a little bit on our show, Megan, is that like what he wants to do is keep this kind of open in an ongoing discussion and basically make a tryout of a whole bunch. Like who can be better?
Like Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah. Right. Like who can be the best asset that he could possibly have? And you can see him paint the other side of the picture. It's like he didn't think these other people behaved properly. Meaning, you know, they were attacking him and whatnot.
Right.
So it's there's
incentive. Okay, so that's my question. That's my question, Holmes. Does they didn't behave appropriately, do you think, we're trying to get into his mind, mean somebody who attacked him? Because I think he would have used a different word. You know, like they turned out to be losers. You know, I think he would have been stronger in his condemnation. And he might have even named them, right, if they had actually slammed him.
I have a theory on this, Megan. I'm really glad you brought it up. Obviously, Donald Trump doesn't like Republicans who criticize him. I think the thing he hates more, and he can smell it on you the moment you walk in the room, is he doesn't like desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what he's at there, where he's like, you know, people that's who are a little too thirsty for the VP slot. And look, I mean, I think this process of selecting a vice president is the most like Donald Trump's previous life. This is a man who understands leverage. He has all of it right now.
Mm.
Right. And so why wouldn't you have a tryout and delay this process as long as possible? And I also intuitively, he knows, like, he has to tell people he's like Santa Claus. He sees if you're naughty or nice. Yeah. And he's watching. He's always watching.
Exactly. All right. Now I have my own theory. My theory is it could be a reference to a rising star in the Republican Party who had such heat and buzz around them that they were asked to deliver the response to the State of the Union.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then bombed. Because you're right, Duncan. He can dismiss you if you stink of desperation. But the worst sin is to embarrass him, is to do anything that would reflect poorly on him. And if there's one thing you can say about Donald Trump above all is the man has an eye for television. I mean, he absolutely, that's how he really made his millions. I think he made more from Celebrity Apprentice and The Apprentice than he made in his real estate empire. I remember seeing something like that. And so I would submit to you gentlemen that when he saw this, we'll play a little bit of it. Maybe he thought it was, quote, inappropriate for a future vice president. Watch.
I never could have imagined what my story would entail. To think about what the American dream can do across just one generation, in just one lifetime. It's truly breathtaking. But right now, the American dream has turned into a nightmare. Our country can do better. And you don't have to look any further than the crisis at our southern border to see it. President Biden inherited the most secure border of all time. He invited it with 94 executive actions in his first 100 days.
Okay. Zero chance he didn't realize what a train wreck that was. He praised her at a rally over the weekend like a classy guy. But there's zero chance he didn't see what the rest of us saw. So what do you think of my theory?
I just don't know that she's really a short list for that discussion, right?
She's dark horse, Holmes.
Maybe that to be the case. Incidentally, in a previous life, one of my jobs was to try to set up people to do the State of the Union response. And I mean set up quite literally, not like set up things. I mean, like, it's the worst job in the
history. Who do we hate?
Oh my God, it's so bad because there's never been a good one. I remember.
Did you pick Rubio? I hope you picked Rubio and sent him out to do
it
that.
It was after.
Wait, Sarah Huckabee Sanders did a good job.
She did a good job.
The ones that did do the best job are the ones you don't remember at all. Right?
Yeah. Wow, yeah, Mitch Daniels.
Yeah, if you don't remember it at all, you're like, oh, they must have done okay.
It's like the Madden cover. Right.
But like the Rubio drinking water, the one that I remember more than anything was Bobby Jindal walking into the foray. Oh. And
that was a disaster.
Everybody was like, oh no. I mean, you just knew everything afterwards was going to be a complete. The optics of it, you go from this filled hall of applause and all the pomp and circumstance of the State of the Union, and then it's like a cold camera. You know?
That's why they shouldn't do it like that. They need somebody nimble. You know what they should have done? They should have gotten somebody like Byron Donalds to go out there and just not even have a script and be like, everything you just heard was bullshit, without using my colorful language. Like, that stuff about the border, he's responsible for that. You know, this stuff about the economy, those are lies. How do you feel his Inflation Reduction Act when you go to the grocery store? Like, somebody who's nimble and fast on their feet and a good talker, even like a Jim Jordan. I don't care. Somebody who can fight live and respond real time.
Yeah.
Or I would recommend Mark Robinson, the governor candidate from North Carolina. As lieutenant governor, he's done a terrific job. You hand him a mic, he will destroy every left-wing narrative put in front of him. Yeah. And like the way that the media has been trying to do these like
I love him.
He's amazing.
Wait, he's the guy with the gender. Oh, yeah. I'm in love with him. Yeah. That's the guy with the, I know he's getting hit for like all sort of politically incorrect positions on a number of issues, which is fine. Like you can't find a normal leader who doesn't have things that are going to upset the left on all their woke gods, right? But his rant on the transgender thing was circulated. All my friends were sending it to me. I love this guy.
He's the best. He's fantastic. And like, I think that's a really important characteristic, is because like Holmes said, you are not going to have, you know, hundreds of your party members in the room with you clapping like seals. So you're going to have to bring that level of showmanship. And someone like Mark Robinson would have been perfect for that situation.
Mm-hmm. Smug, we have it. Hold on. We have it cut. Watch it for the audience who doesn't know who he is. Take a listen.
You can go to the doctor and get cut up. You can go down to the dress shop and get made up. You can go down there and get drugged up. But at the end of the day, you were just a drugged up, dressed up, made up, cut up man or woman. You ain't changed what God put in you, that DNA.
He just tells the truth.
Let's get him. Why? Honestly, like, they, you know, but they went, they, I look, obviously he would be a diverse choice too, but I think they went with Katie Britt because she's diverse. She's a woman. The GOP is struggling with women, and they just, I don't know who's making these decisions. Cause I don't think they understand women at all. What they don't, we don't want to see some kind of meek woman sitting in her kitchen acting overly dramatic. Those friends annoy us. We want somebody, maybe like give her a glass of wine and she can be like, sisters, let me tell you what the Democrats are doing to our children. This is fucked up. You need somebody you can talk directly to. Like, who do they think Republican women are? It's not like Carolyn Ingalls sitting on the prairie needing someone to work on the fifth tier and feel our pain.
Like, Holmes, is there a rule that they have to be elected, or could we have had Megan do this?
No, there is no rule. I mean, look, the whole process is fairly antiquated, right? I mean, it's designed to try to mitigate risk, but it actually creates more risk because
how many careers can we take out?
As you said, it's like the media landscape has changed entirely, and yet we still kind of go back to that same thing. I remember once back, I think this was 2010 or 2011, we decided to roll the dice. Remember Bob McDonald, the governor of Virginia, who had just been elected in Virginia in a special or a off-year election, and we had him do it in the Virginia House of Delegates. With the crowd, and it kind of looked a little bit like the State of the Union, and I felt like that was one of our best things because we were way outside of the box. But to my knowledge, that's literally the only time that's ever happened.
And I think you're right. There's no upside to doing it. I bet that's why a lot of folks. I mean, if they were approached, if I would be approached, I'd say, heck no.
Yeah.
Like, what's the upside here? Everyone's waiting for me to bomb.
But you would do it if you were an elected official, like I think Byron Donalds would have been a great choice because I've talked to him many times. He's very fast on his feet and he's very familiar with the issues. And I really think part of the problem, the only reason you need to set it up with that sort of architecture with, you know, a second fake crowd of your own is if you're trying to make your thing like the State of the Union thing. You have to do it just completely counter-program. Don't even try any of that. Just go do something lame like me with the books in the background here in Montana. It's not my real studio. Do something it's not about trying to impress you. It's just me, because I don't want to do this, but I'm not even a Republican.
So I guess somebody like me in front of
a camera saying like the stuff I just said, you know, like talk to people real and make it real time. So it actually is a response. It's a response, but they're not nimble enough. They're not quick on their feet. They're afraid. They're scared to be in front of camera. So ideally you'd get somebody who comes on TV a lot or had a TV program who, you know, radio people like Sean Hannity, he's always been amazing. You need somebody who can speak extemporaneously about the issues in a compelling, quick way.
Or like Carrie Lake. I mean, this is someone who's got a tremendous experience in front of the camera. And that's why like anytime she'd be
amazing.
Terrific at it. Terrific.
I still think Megan's the best idea, and you can tell by her backdrop she's very well read.
Yeah.
Very.
That's what I'm getting from the backdrop. That's speaking to me. This is someone who knows the issues.
I only just took the white books for behind my scenery here. All my other books are around the corner. I do have non-white books for all of you, you know, calling me a Karen. Karen only gets white books.
Perfect.
All right. I'm going to stand you by. I'm going to do an ad. We're going to come back and I'm going to talk about another person who I think Trump might have been referring to. She's not as strong a contender as behaving inappropriately. And you're going to tell me whether I have it right. Stand by. The guys who have the Ruthless program, stay with us. Up next, we are going to talk about Don Lemon. Oh my God, what a meltdown. Yesterday, he interviewed Elon Musk before his show ever got launched on X. It was canceled. He got canceled before he started, which is a new kind of cancellation. Great job, Don. Stand by. We'll get into all of it. And while I have you, don't forget to go over to youtube.com/MeghanKelly and subscribe if you would like to watch the show. You can download on podcasts wherever you get yours for free. Pure Talk is once again investing in their customers without charging an extra penny because Pure Talk is now providing international roaming to over 50 countries. That's right. As you plan your summer travel, make sure your wireless provider has you covered at home and abroad. Pure Talk already puts you on America's most dependable 5G network, but now they're giving you coverage in over 50 countries as well. Unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. That's less than the half of what Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile will charge you. If you bring your phone, Pure Talk's eSIM technology will make switching so simple. Or you can get great savings on the latest iPhones and Androids. Consider making the switch to Pure Talk. Just go to puretalk.com/Kelly to start saving today. And when you do, you will save an additional 50% off your first month. Again, visit puretalk.com/Kelly to start saving on wireless at home and abroad.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
Welcome, Ashbrook. Glad you could make it. Thank you for joining. We were going over possible vice presidential picks because Trump says he's eliminated some people because they, quote, behaved inappropriately. Mm-hmm. I am theorizing that Katie Britt is now out because of the State of the Union response. Holmes does not think she was ever in the running at all. Here is another person who may or may not have, quote, behaved inappropriately to the point where they're no longer being considered. I give you South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who for some reason...
I see what you're doing here.
You know.
I see what you're doing here.
You know. This is perfect for you. She put out like an ad. I don't know. Like a promo for a dentist who's not in South Dakota. The guy is in Texas. And he gave her veneers on her teeth. Like not just Invisalign or braces or whitening, but like a whole new set of teeth. Veneers, I think, are caps. And she got them. And the guy did a good job. We'll show you the before and after. But here she is praising the guy.
I have needed to have an adjustment to my teeth from a biking accident. I did a consultation here at Smile Texas and did it by Zoom. I spent my whole life farming and ranching, riding horses, chasing cows, and then got into government and politics where everything is speaking and interviews and giving speeches. I want when people look at me to hear the words that I say and not be distracted by something that I'm wearing or how I look. When they showed me my beautiful new teeth, I hugged Dr. Davis and thanked him and started to cry just because he really does care about the work that he does. It has been a gift to be here at Smile Texas.
Okay. Don't know why she did that, but now she's getting sued by Travelers United, a consumer advocacy nonprofit, because they are saying you violated the law by doing what was clearly a paid advertisement and you didn't disclose that it was an advertisement. Like, remember, Kim Kardashian's got in trouble for this on social media. Yeah. If you're actually going to promote something and you're receiving either money or a benefit in kind, like if you got your veneers for free or a discount, you have to disclose that you're required. So this whole thing has caused some problems for her, I guess. And I mean, is a little weird for someone reportedly trying to get on the short list. I like Kristi Noem, but what do you think of this?
I think she's being unfairly attacked. She's trying to stimulate trade between South Dakota and Texas.
In the right? form of better teeth.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of economic activity that could happen between South Dakota and Texas. And she's trying to raise awareness of this. And now she's being attacked for it. You know, I mean, Dr. Smile, I will say I'm this, available too.
Dr. Davis does amazing work. Look, and I'm not getting paid for to say that. I don't know Dr. Davis, but look at the before and afters. Hold on. We're going to put it on the board. Look at this. Well
done. He does good work.
Well done.
Let's do a close-up. Look, we're going to show you the close-up. Stand by. Huh? Oh,
yeah, Dr. Davis, huh? No, I mean, look, I guess it worked out for him.
It worked out for him. Yeah, I don't know that it's going to work out for her or whether this is like appropriate gubernatorial or vice presidential material. Go ahead, Ashbrook. Right.
Well, this is the thing. I'm sure Dr. Davis is a perfectly nice guy, obviously capable technician. But there's not a dentist in Sioux Falls. Like, there's not. How about just walking down the street and finding some dentist like around the corner?
I mean, they're do that kind of work. Are you kidding me?
I know. What does it say to the guys in South Dakota? Right? Right. You couldn't find anybody to do that to you there?
Exactly.
I don't know. I think it's a step up. I don't know if you saw her like PSA ads in South Dakota. Do you guys see any?
Oh, yeah.
She was like in the doctor's office and all of that.
Yeah.
That kind of gave you some weird vibes. I feel like this is a step up in that situation.
I don't get it. I love the teeth, though. She's a beautiful woman. And Dr. Davis, I mean, thumbs up to you, sir. You do beautiful work. And now I think we're all thinking about getting veneers. That was an amazing end product. She's not the only one in the VP hunt, though. I move on now to RFKJ, who has made news the news was reportedly that basically everybody he asked said no. Like Rand Paul, no. Tulsi Gabbard, no. I think there were others on the list. It was all no's. And then now the last two men reportedly on the short list are Jesse Ventura, former WWE star and governor of Minnesota, and Aaron Rodgers, New York Jets quarterback? I think he's quarterback. You guys know. Here is RFKJ addressing the matter.
You know, he's one of the people that we've talked to. I really like Aaron because, you know, our appeal is to young people. We're trying to make sure that young people are participating in the political process, that they have hope for America. We want somebody, the people who have run up the $34 trillion debt, which they're dumping on that generation, are all older people. And we want somebody young who's going to look out for that generation. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers is battle tested. He's stood up. He's been hammered by the press. Stood up for things we believed, and I like that part of his character. He's a critical thinker, and I think we need that at the time, as you know, the rise of AI. We need people who understand that you cannot always trust authority just because somebody's in charge.
All right. Can I just say one thing before I give it to you guys? It was 2 years ago, I think, right now, 2 years ago, this week or this month, that I put RFKJ on this show after just a ton of research by my team. Nobody would platform the guy. He could not get, he was banned everywhere. You couldn't get any airtime. He couldn't. And we put him on and we did two full days with the guy. It was a great exchange. And he has said that was the beginning of his resurrection in being allowed back into, you know, circles of television and digital media as a voice. And you may not like him, you may love him, but it's ridiculous to have that brilliant American banned from having a voice in the conversation. So I will just say it's a personal point of pride to see him now sitting on Fox News delivering his message and, you know, just saying what he believes. And there's a lot of people who feel exactly as he does about big government, the military industrial complex, vaccines, all of it. So anyway, okay, you go, RFKJ. I'm rooting on his continued resurrection. So Aaron Rodgers, you tell me, is that real or is that an attention getter?
Well, it's certainly an attention getter, Megan. And if he does pick Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers doesn't get hurt this football season, every Sunday we'll be reminded on national television, the most expensive advertising platform on the planet, the NFL, NFL at 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock, that Aaron Rodgers is running for vice president with RFK Jr. But the problem is everybody knows Aaron Rodgers has a weak Achilles, and I would look for Stephen Chung or somebody at the Trump campaign to go directly for it, because they know exactly how to knock him out and they know how to stop their opposition.
My thought on this, Megan, is that he's got the wrong quarterback. I don't know if you – I know you're not a huge NFL person, but if Kirk Cousins, former Minnesota Viking, one of my guys I rooted on for years, if you're looking for somebody who's very strong in the economy – I'm not sure that you can think of a single person who is more qualified than somebody who's made $500 million in the NFL and won one playoff game. So that was big news this week. And I think it maybe an adjustment on the quarterback might be.
I'm just surprised that more ambitious politicians didn't say yes to his offer for VP. I mean, statistically, every vice president for President Kennedy has gone on to become president. Like, if you just follow the odds.
I mean, I actually think Tulsi Gabbard makes a lot of sense. Right? Democrat, now independent. That's kind of what he is. He says he's still a Democrat, but he's running as an independent.
I think picking an NFL player is also complicated. We're going through free agency right now. And I'm not commissioner of the NFL, but I have to imagine if you get selected to run for vice president of the United States, either they're going to have to share the contract with the Jets organization so they can get back a little bit of their cap space, which is probably fantastic. But then also maybe some conditional picks down the road for the NFL draft.
That'd be nice.
If they could work out that deal, I think he'd be the perfect selection.
Well, if anybody could do it, it's Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, a great businessman. Wow. And this guy really, really knows.
And he's interested
doing
in politics.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, no, he is. He was Trump's ambassador.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To him, right?
Yeah. That's right. Now we're just getting this. This is actually breaking news. After, Aaron Rodgers spoke out Thursday, that's today, on X, in the wake of a CNN report, which decided to attack him in the wake of the news that he might be our next vice president.
Of course.
It's a long shot, to say the least. Decided it was time to start doing hit pieces on Aaron Rodgers, I guess. And I saw this headline of CNN suggesting he was like an Alex Jones on Sandy Hook.
Yeah, I saw
that. That he was engaging in Sandy Hook conspiracy theories, that it never happened, that the children didn't die. And then I saw considerable pushback. I confessed to my audience I didn't do any investigation. I was not planning on going there on today's show, but this is just breaking. That he spoke out Thursday, just now, in the wake of that CNN report, alleging that he floated this conspiracy theory about Sandy Hook. CNN had reported that it knows of two people with whom Rodgers has, quote, enthusiastically shared these stories, including with Pamela Brown, one of the journalists writing this piece. When Brown questioned him on the evidence in 2013 to show this very real shooting was staged, Rodgers began sharing various theories that have been disproven numerous times. Wait, question him on the evidence. The conspiracy theory is that it was staged, and she was asking him that, and he began sharing various theories that have been disproven numerous times. His post on X, quote, "As I'm on the record saying in the past, what happened in Sandy Hook was an absolute tragedy. I am not and have never been of the opinion that the events did not take place. Again, I hope that we learn from this and other tragedies to identify the signs that will allow us to prevent unnecessary loss of life. My thoughts and prayers continue to remain with the families affected along with the entire Sandy Hook community." I mean, this is like, I don't know what the truth is about him, but that is not something you report if it's not true. I mean, that is bullshit. If CNN reported it's not true, that is effed up. And if he said it, even more effed up.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of garbage journalism to begin with. What you're talking about is a conversation that allegedly took place 11 years ago. I mean, it was pretty newsworthy at the time, but apparently not newsworthy enough for Pamela Brown to go with it at the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now, like 11 years later in a political context, all of a sudden now we got to talk that through in public. Mm-hmm. I mean,
now that he's linked to RFKJ.
Right. I mean, I don't know whether it's true. I don't know anything about Aaron Rodgers other than his public persona and that he plays football and he's got a pretty good arm. But like, it just seems to me that this is why people hate media. Yep. This is why. This is like the definition of why.
Mm-hmm.
Is that hard
I'll just
for you
hold it in my pocket until you run for office on a ticket I don't like, and that's then it. I'll get you.
Yeah. That has to be really hard for Holmes to admit that he has a good arm as a Minnesota Vikings fan.
I'm not proud of it.
Yeah.
No.
So you're rooting for Jesse Ventura.
Oh, God. I lived through that. I was a Minnesotan at that era. That was not our finest
moment. How'd that
go? Not great. Not great.
Okay. Speaking of... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, the one thing I know in that statement is it did sound like a guy who might be running for vice president.
It did. It was very PR heavy.
That's true. All right. Now, I do want to get to Don Lemon because that's my favorite story of the day. But can I just ask you quickly to weigh in on Ken Buck?
Sure.
Ken Buck announcing like his immediate retirement from Congress. And, you know, there's a lot of people saying, holy shit, there's not enough of a margin there for the Republicans to spare it. Although they still need to win everything by two. You know, I don't, it's like they're still on a very, very slim majority in the House either way, with or without him. So how does this affect anything with the Republicans? And what does it tell us about the state of the Republican Party?
Well, it goes to one of our chief critiques of the current state of the Republican Party and a lack of team play. And in the House of Representatives, the only way that you get anything done with a conservative majority, especially when you have fewer than five vote majorities, is entirely by working together and trying to do this as a team. And what Ken Buck did, obviously, I think is a reflection.
Republican from Colorado.
Yeah, as much of what he's done throughout his career, he didn't care about the team. Didn't care about the team at all. And the problem is like, no, clearly. I mean, he's walking out.
I don't know anything about Ken Buck. Can you tell me more about Ken Buck? I know he did not vote for the Mayorkas impeachment and that I think he's been a Trump critic, but I don't know much more about him.
Well, I mean, he's one of the eight that voted against Kevin McCarthy, right? He's had this pattern throughout his career of being this sort of iconoclastic, go-it-alone type guy that doesn't work within the confines of the team. The problem for your listeners, the problem when you get lawmakers who do that in the House of Representatives is that for every Republican you lose, you need to go pick up a Democrat. And when you do that, everything drifts further and further to the left. Like if you're passing a spending bill and you need 30 Democratic votes because you have 30 Republicans that won't vote for it, guess what happens? That's how you get a $36 trillion debt because there's a price of admission for all these people coming together if you don't play team ball. And I think Ken Buck is just the latest perfect example of somebody who's really let the center right and the conservative movement down in this country by failing to see the larger objectives that he said he was trying to run for Congress for in the first place.
Why is this bad for Lauren Boebert?
Ooh. Duncan, you understand the intricacies of that. I actually asked Duncan how it worked yesterday.
I don't think it's bad for Lauren Boebert. She's going to move out of her current district to run in that seat, but she's declining to run in the special election to replace Ken Buck because she says she wants to be focused on, you know, that general election rather than kind of abandoning her current constituents, which I think is probably the right decision. But, you know,
it's really tricky, too, because we know Colorado not unsusceptible to trickery amongst the judicial branch there.
Yeah.
But what could potentially happen there is if they redistrict her district to make it much more Democrat. And so she's moving into the Ken Buck district to run for that district. But you could see if she were to run in a special election, she would have to give up her district, which is now very Democrat. You could lose another Republican seat on that, right? But the challenge—
I don't understand anything other than the last thing you said, which makes sense to me. So they could lose yet another seat. And but the real question is, are they in danger? I mean, like if they have two more retirements between now and the next election, then we have a Speaker Jeffries?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And it may not even take that. I mean, part of the problem is you get some folks there who are every time they find something that they disagree with, they're calling for a vacate the chair, meaning they want to kick Mike Johnson out. They haven't done that yet, thank God. But if they did and you have two absences, a united Democratic front, that vote is going to be a Speaker Jeffries. Right. So, I mean, you don't even need the retirements. They're very, very thinly holding on to a majority.
I think what they need in the United States Congress is one of those, you know, those safety at work signs where it's like, you know, it's been 45 days since our last accident.
Oh,
they need one of those signs on the wall. And it's been 0 days since we lost a Republican.
That would be.
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't sound like good news. The GOP is so fractured. It's like the Dems have the crazy squad. But other than that, they vote together. And the Republican Party has just been in disarray for a number of years. And we'll see. We'll see whether Donald Trump has enough coattails to bring them back together and bring a big majority into one or both houses of Congress. But it's hard to feel hopeful right now, given just how bad it is. And in the lower house in particular. But okay, let's move on to something happier. Don Lemon. Don Lemon got fired again already. He fired before he really got hired. It's very hard for Don Lemon to keep a job. And we know why. He got, amazingly, Elon Musk offered him a deal to post a new show on X. And Elon Musk is a risk taker. So I guess he thought this would be a fun risk, just as risky, I guess, as like putting spaceships into outer space. Because it really was just that risky, Elon. He probably just thought, oh, he's like a left-wing commentator. I doubt Elon spent his time watching CNN primetime because literally only two people did. And so he decided to give him a deal at the same time. Speaking of Tulsi Gabbard, he gave her a show on X and I think a couple of others. He's trying to make X a platform where, you know, you have voices like Tucker from the right, you have voices like Lemon on the left, and it's a forum for everybody. Well, okay. I will give it to Bill O'Reilly, who I saw a clip of him this morning saying, don't interview your boss. That is the lesson that came out of this hot mess of exchange between Don and Elon, because Elon gave Don an interview to launch on his first show. And I will say Don Lemon behaved like an asshole who was not grateful to Elon Musk for resurrecting his career. And O'Reilly's right. It's very hard for Don Lemon in this position to both be a good journalist and be a good employee. You know, the man's paying your salary. So you do owe him a level of respect and discretion. And at the same time, you want to prove to us in your first interview back how hard hitting you are. And those two goals are not aligned. So I don't blame Elon for being mad at the way he was treated, which now Don is admitting it didn't end well. And Elon was pissed off when it ended. And reportedly, Kara Swisher reporting that when it was over, Elon texted a company, you know, a colleague saying contract canceled. And that's how Don's new show got canceled. It's not, the show's not canceled. It can still air on X. It can air wherever he wants it to air. I can air my show on X now. You guys can air your show on X, but he's not going to get paid by Elon for it. And reportedly there was no written contract. So even though of course, Don Lemon, through a spokesperson, who's the same woman Jeff Zucker was having an affair with, Allison Gollis, is threatening to sue. All our old favorites are involved in this one, fellas. Okay, knock three times. That's the woman. Knock this three times on the ceiling if you want. That was the greatest English program ever. That was the woman above Jeff Zucker when he lived with his family, and they got fired because they were having an affair and all the stuff. And now that woman's representing Don Lemon as a spokesman, threatening to sue Elon. Our entire worlds have come together. I will show you a little bit of what got Don Lemon fired this time. I'll just give you one example. Here he is accusing Musk of allowing hate speech on X in SOT4.
Hate speech on the platform is up. Do you believe that X and you have some responsibility to moderate hate speech on the platform? That you wouldn't have to answer these questions from reporters about the great replacement theory as it relates to Democrats?
I don't have to answer these questions.
The great replacement theory as it relates to Jewish people. Do you think that?
I don't have to answer questions from reporters. Don, the only reason I'm doing this interview is because you're on the X platform and you asked for it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would not do this interview.
So you don't think, do you think that you wouldn't get in trouble or you wouldn't be criticized for these things?
I'm criticized constantly. I could care less.
Oh, man, that guy is so great.
Wow.
Don Lemon's problem is not that he's too much of a journalist. It's that he's too unfailingly partisan. He never did this with Jeff Zucker, but he has one chance to talk to Elon Musk, and he jumps ugly on the guy. I cannot believe he did that. It's the dumbest possible thing that anybody could do. I mean, there's a lot to like about Elon Musk, other than the fact that he won't sell an internal combustion engine. There is a lot to like about him. I think that the guy built a great platform, and why not ask him about that? Like, why go into your partisan talking
The place
point?
That just resurrected your career, the man who just resurrected your career. Show some gratitude. Ask him about how amazing X is doing and how it's thriving, notwithstanding all the doomsday predictions and whatever happened to loser threads over on Facebook. Elon's having a moment, but not in Don's life, in his world, even though he just got this great opportunity.
Right. It's not journalism. It's narcissism. Like the guy can't help himself.
Yeah, it's sort of crazy. It's crazy.
Let me just give you one other. We have a bunch to go through because, of course, we love the story. Here's Don on CNN. He goes back to CNN, the other place that just fired him, and gives an interview about this guy firing him with Aaron Burnett and explains why he felt the need to do that to Elon in that question. Watch this.
He doesn't understand that sort of rhetoric that he talks about, the great replacement theory and migrant invasion, that's what radicalized shooters use in their manifestos, those exact words. The people who go and shoot up people, whether they be Latino people who live in Texas or Black people who are in a supermarket in Buffalo or Jewish people who are worshiping, those people use the same rhetoric. As someone who has one of the largest social media and information platforms, and it doesn't seem that he feels that he has any responsibility with that because he seemed really averse to facts.
Oh my God. He seemed averse to facts. Yeah.
This platform paying me all this money sucks. Tune into my show on this platform. It makes no sense. You know, I don't get it. I do wonder if maybe this is Don Lemon's long game. You know, like he was a double agent this whole time. He's going in there to get a show on X just so he can, you know,
burn
the place down. He goes back.
I really think you're overestimating his intelligence.
I feel like that might be right. I feel like right. That might be.
Yeah. So, okay, it wasn't enough to say you're basically a racist and you allow racism, you foment racism, which is how he began it. But he also got around to, and you're a druggie and probably irresponsible and maybe not somebody stockholders want to invest with. Here's how he set that up. And then I'll give you the soundbite of him explaining that one on his other fired network, CNN. Let's run SOT6.
You talk about your ketamine use and depression. You also have said, and
the reason I mentioned the ketamine prescription on the X platform was because I thought maybe this is something that can help other people. That's why I mentioned it. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, but I would say if someone has depression issues, they should consider talking to their doctor about ketamine instead of SSRIs.
Okay, now here's Don explaining why he thought it was important to bring that up in his limited time that Elon Musk, who doesn't give a lot of interviews, granted him. He decided to go to ketamine and depression with Elon, and this is why. Watch SOT 7.
It's no secret. His drug use, or alleged drug use, I should say, has been extensively written about it by very credible news organizations like the Wall Street Journal. And I asked him that, and he said, listen, I have not read the Wall Street Journal. I don't read the Wall Street Journal. If I don't have time to read about everything that people write about me, I would never get anything done. Elon Musk is responsible for satellites, for Starlink. He's responsible for Tesla. He's responsible for a number of different companies in the stock market.
Yep.
And I think that it is important for people to understand his mindset, whether he's using drugs legally or not, but ones that he's supposed to be, that he is using prescription-wise, that he's following a doctor's orders under that.
Is that for real?
You're dangerous?
He's so concerned about the prescription.
Oh, right, you foment racism. You're a druggie who's running all these big companies, and I want to see your prescription. And he doesn't understand why Elon was like, it's over.
I mean, it's just amazing. Okay, and now on to your womanizing. You know what I mean? Like, what? That is just a broadside attack.
Right.
And also, he tries saying that he's like rooted in facts, and he says, oh, he's got several stocks, you know, public stocks that he's in control of. Oh, and yeah. I think his shareholders should be concerned. Maybe you should talk to one of the shareholders. Over 10 years, every dollar you put in Tesla is worth $2,000. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I think they're over the moon about that performance. If it's due
I think
to
the shareholders are more concerned about the fact that he tried to hire Don Lemon than anything they heard in this interview. Yeah.
So that's of course, a real lack of judgment.
Of course, then he goes out, and now Don Lemon's biggest takeaway from all of this is that Elon Musk is not for free speech, that he's a fake free speech warrior because he's no longer wanting to give Don millions of dollars. Don Lemon can still post on X. He can still post as a podcast, wherever he wants to post. But because Elon no longer wants to give him millions. Done it, Matt. Here's a little bit of that on CNN on Sat9.
During the course of that interview, I never raised my voice. I told him, you know, I think this is important for people to hear, especially considering how the type of discourse that we're having in the country right now. And he supposedly says this is a public square for all. Maybe we're learning that a public square should not be privately owned by someone who doesn't think that there should be any moderation on that platform. And I could tell that he was upset and he was uncomfortable. It was tense. And I said, listen, I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable. As a matter of fact, I would go and have a beer and hash these things out. You and I do not agree on much, but I will fight for your right as to be able to say what you want to say. That's what freedom of speech means to me. Freedom of speech does not mean, I guess, the same thing to him as it does to me.
What?
he's delusional.
Don Lemon, free speech champion. Yeah. That's a new one.
Who's got the drug problem? I don't know. Like that, you could find that in psych ward. Yeah, we're joking. We're laughing.
It's unbelievable, though. Like, so first of all, he didn't lose any freedom of speech whatsoever. Absolutely none. He will be seen by the same four viewers now as he would have before. Elon said, I'm not giving you millions. By the way, reportedly, he just got like a $25 million payoff from CNN for that firing. They paid him out his deal rather than have a litigation with him. Then Elon reportedly cut him a multi-million dollar deal, which he fucked up right before he even launched the show. And now he's claiming that his free speech. You're not the victim. You're not the victim. You're not a victim in any way.
But he continues to escape
consequences. Like CNN says, okay, you're fired because you turn out to be a misogynist in our view. And he runs and plays the victim there. Now this happens. Oh, I've been victimized again. He doesn't like diverse people. He said twice, he claimed he wanted something more diverse, but I guess somebody like diverse like me isn't what he wanted. We know what that's code for. And he's reveling once again, Ashbrook, in poor me and my millions.
But Megan, he didn't raise his voice.
Yeah, that's the important thing.
Stuck to discourse. And if Elon doesn't like it, then he should give his platform to the public, i.e. Don Lemon.
Yeah, he should just give it to Don Lemon. And Tesla,
you caught that, right? Where he was like, maybe this person shouldn't be owning such a platform.
Right. Yeah, and the same breath that he's like, well, I fight for his right to do it. It's like, well, actually, you're kind of fighting for his right to take it away. Right?
I'd love to have a beer with you. I think you're a racist and a druggie and you foment mass shootings and you shouldn't own this platform. Let's go have a beer.
Yeah, I love that. You know what? The only thing that this was missing, fellas, is that that Tubin wasn't conducting the interview.
Right.
Because if you got the in-house masturbator on it, we would have completed the full circle of Ruthless.
True.
And like everything that makes us happy.
Well, I do have a fun view clip coming up for you later, so maybe we'll see where that goes. There's still plenty more opportunity for our old faves. All right, stand by, because the Ruthless guys really want to discuss Kate Middleton. Not even kidding. And we're going to do that next. Don't go away. I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM at home or anywhere you are. No car required. I do it all the time. I love the Sirius XM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Pure Talk is once again investing in their customers without charging an extra penny, because Pure Talk is now providing international roaming to over 50 countries. That's right. As you plan your summer travel, make sure your wireless provider has you covered at home and abroad. Pure Talk already puts you on America's most dependable 5G network, but now they're giving you coverage in over 50 countries as well. Unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. That's less than the half of what Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile will charge you. If you bring your phone PureTalk's eSIM technology will make switching so simple. Or you can get great savings on the latest iPhones and Androids. Consider making the switch to PureTalk. Just go to puretalk.com/Kelly to start saving today. And when you do, you will save an additional 50% off your first month. Again, visit puretalk.com/Kelly to start saving on wireless at home and abroad.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
Kate Middleton owns the internet. We haven't been this united as a country since Tiger King. She is the person who has brought us together, ironically a Brit, bringing Americans together. And everyone would like to know what's wrong with her. So Dan Wooten, who has broken pretty much every piece of big, huge royal news over the past 10 years, was on the program yesterday saying Kate is, quote, very unwell, that she is alive, because some of the conspiracy theorists on the internet are wondering whether she's even still with us. God, you know, it's a joke. But, I mean, it's not a joke by me, whatever, but they think that. She's very unwell, but he does say she's expected to get better. But many, many people think that this is either from its get-go or has morphed into or is in some way related to marital strife between Kate Middleton and her husband, Prince William, that he allegedly cheated on her, okay, hold on, with somebody named Sarah Rose Hanbury. Dan Wooten broke that story too back in, I think, 2019, that he, you know, had an affair partner and she stayed with him, Kate Middleton. And it's not that unusual for these princes or kings, whatever, to have someone on the side. And that somehow this is all related to what we're seeing. Now, this leads to things like the following from TikTok and someone who calls themselves pop apologists. Take a look at this theory.
Where is Kate Middleton? Part 16. This will be the most shocking video of the entire series, and I pray this is not true. I got a message yesterday about Rose Hanbury that seemed so preposterous, that seemed so out there, I ignored it. Word around London and what a lot of people believe is going on, and I'm just gonna say it, it's so crazy, but apparently the affair with Rose Hanbury, it never stopped. And Rose Hanbury right now is pregnant with William's baby and she's keeping it. And the ambulances that were seen leaving Sandringham right after Christmas were taking Kate, who's having a complete mental breakdown. Kate is allegedly completely done. She's no longer cooperating with Kensington Palace, which is why we can only get these fake photos of her.
Okay. Also, they found the body at Area 47 out in Nevada. Look, this is, people have lost their minds. But there is something going on, and it does appear that Kate Middleton seems pissed off because the latest paparazzi shot of her, she intentionally looked the other way. She didn't make eye contact with the camera. We don't know exactly what's happening. What do you guys think is going on with Kate Middleton?
Well, let me start with it. I was under the impression that we fought a war so I wouldn't have to care about these people.
Amen.
But frankly, Megan, you had me at royal side piece. So now I'm willing to entertain all of this. They were told in January that she was having some abdominal surgery and that she would basically not be in public until Easter. Well, I mean, it's not Easter yet, right? So I guess the photo that came out was like kind of photoshopped or whatever. And I don't know if that means that like literally she wasn't in the photo. I don't know what that means. I haven't done enough homework on that. But like, I don't know. I just have a hard time getting all worked up about it. I have no idea. Apparently, this is a big deal to a lot of people, though.
Yeah, so I don't use Chinese spyware apps, so I'm not on TikTok, but I enjoyed greatly the like 30 seconds of brain damage that like we just witnessed. Actually, it's entertaining. I think that's the problem here. Is like,
that's right.
Yes, it's insanity, but sometimes insanity can be fun. So now I'm willing to entertain all the crazy shit. I think I'm not a doctor. Maybe she is dead. Maybe this is a cover up. Maybe the mistress killed her and dresses up like her in the like, fake shots that the royal family is setting up. I mean, we know they're not trustworthy people and they all hate each other.
And so anything's possible. They do lie.
She's cloistered away with Princess Di somewhere.
Yeah, could be. I mean, like, the thing I really come to the conclusion is if this was some kind of a serious medical condition that, you know, Kate had, whether it was cancer or something like that, you know, the royal family would be farming sympathy as much as possible. They've been in a years-long PR war with a like redheaded son and his wife. So like they would try to get people on their side by any means necessary. But the fact that they're not means they must be doing something sketchy.
What do you think, Dunce?
That's scary.
I mean, we have a mental health crisis in this country. we really do. I mean, I knew that video was going to be a banger in the first 4 seconds when she said, "This is part 16.
Buckle up.
Oh, so
I feel like I need some ketamine.
Scary music.
My God.
You gotta give her points on the production value, right? With the music.
Yeah. It just sucks you right in.
The photos, yeah. I'll tell you, so I don't feel bad talking about this even a little because literally she might be the most famous woman in the world. I mean, I can't think of somebody who's more famous than Kate Middleton. And how did she get so famous? She married Prince William. Was that an accident? Hell no. They were calling her the weighty Katie and all that, which she didn't like, which I understand. But I mean, she wanted to marry him. And I'm sure it wasn't just because of his lovely hair. So they did get married and she became one of the most famous, richest, whatever, all the stuff. And this is the downside of it. There's interest in you. There's way more upside than there is downside to having people this interested in you. And unfortunately, that means if you have a major health crisis, people are going to want to know about it. And that was true for the queen. And it's really true for a 42-year-old future queen who shouldn't be having 1 month stays in the hospital and then 3 month reclusive periods thereafter to the point where she has to release, which she did, by the way, she got us paying attention to her by releasing the photograph. She could have just said, I've gone underground. I'm still in my recovery. I'm not, but she released through the palace, this photo of her and the family, which was a fake. I don't know exactly what she did to it or how she did it, but you know, Dan, who I love, was, you know, he's got sources there, so he's got to be careful. But he was like, "Oh, haven't we all edited a photo here or there? The sleeves on the child were different. The sweater on the boy was different. Like there were so many. The skirt was different. Like when we edit a photo, you put like a different lighting on it, or maybe you like retouch a blemish. You don't like change out everybody's outfit and superimpose you from the British Vogue cover or wherever. Like something massive happened in that thing. It was a fake and a fraud to the point where the agencies all pulled it. So I make no apologies for being interested in this because when people smell a lie, especially involving somebody that rich and powerful, they don't let go.
Can we get back to the royal side piece part of this for a second?
There's more.
I've never heard about this before.
There's more. I missed the whole initial report of it.
There's a whole theory that this woman did have an affair with Prince William and Kate found out about it, but stuck with him because she would never leave Prince William. And that this woman used to be, she's also a royal. So she's somehow a royal. But she used to be very beautiful. Forgive me. This is the rumor. That now maybe less so after all of the brain damage. This is an unconfirmed, to be clear. This is a rumor that given all the strife she's gone through with this royal family. I don't know what's true. They all you know, for years, the royals have been marrying internally and having affairs internally. It's like first cousin is not a deal breaker for anybody in the royal family.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I don't think that the bald prince would cheat on his wife.
The bald one?
Yeah. I mean, like his dad probably set a good example of the importance of marriage.
And his mom, too.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. All right. Good point.
You know,
well, here's my view clip for you for the day. They don't think this is appropriate. Whoopi Goldberg would like us all to just STFU. Watch.
She took a picture. She said, listen, I photoshopped it myself.
Whoever took it, someone took it of her.
Sarah, can I say,
they photoshopped the photo?
The palace also made a mistake here.
And then they released two photoshopped photos.
We're going to go to break.
I'm too angry now.
Because it's... People do this to you. You know, you haven't had this done to you.
It's our fault
because we bought into this. When you buy into this stuff, when they start doing it to your family or they start doing it to your kids, it's not cute. It's not fun, and it really irritates me.
Why then didn't she just put the family together and get a photographer to take the picture?
Because she wanted to do it.
I'm going to put this out because you're going to get hammered for this.
It's true.
I'm just going to say it. This is all speculation and we're having fun, okay? Just know that we don't know.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, it's nice to see that Whoopi's engaged in ethics and journalism.
I mean, that's the one thing. I think that's like extremely telling of leftists now where they're like, how dare you not lick the boots of our royalty? You know, like, how did this happen? Where they're like, okay, you're not allowed to criticize royals, but I hope journalists hunt down some grandma for a Facebook meme and try to ruin her life. Like,
sort through her mail.
Fair game is not the royal family. Of course they're fair game. And she's like, well, how would you feel if your children hunted down? I doubt any journalist cares about some random kid on Photoshop. CNN will probably hunt him down if they disagree with it. But like, that is an insane comparison to be like, that is very unfair and mean to be critical of the royal family.
That's a great point.
I really like that Whoopi said, we don't actually know what we're talking about. This is all just speculation. And I really wish she had that disclaimer on every single one of her segments.
Nice to say. Good point. Yeah. Blanket disclaimer at the beginning of every show,
like a crawl going along, being like,
she was one step away from accusing us of doxing Kate Middleton. It's like,
yeah,
no, Kate is famous, Catherine, because she's literally the Princess of Wales. She's the future queen. That's why we're interested in her. It was a position she sought and accepted. She puts herself out there on the balcony in the pictures along with her husband. They, of course, make the children public figures. They're born public figures and then they remain and get touted and flouted and all the rest of it. That's a choice. You don't have to do that, especially Kate. She could have remained a commoner like she was. This is like what it comes with the territory. I'm sorry. I know you want to keep whatever happened to you private. You kind of, that ship sailed when you joined this wacky family. And now people are interested in you for better or for worse. Net, net, it's for better. So that's that. Okay, let's move on because your other friend, Dylan Mulvaney, is in the news. I'm sorry, I've got to do it, but Dylan is in the news celebrating his second year of being a girl and has decided to go full music video. There's a viewer warning attached to this.
Oh,
all viewers will find this disturbing.
Including this one.
Boys on the dance floor.
That's the meanest thing you've ever done to me.
It's just terrible. It's terrible. My only complaint about Twitter is that when you look at libs of TikTok and you click on a link to read it, then all of a sudden the algorithm pushes these trans at the top of your thing and you can't get away from it. And then you come to the Megyn Kelly show for some fun and frivolity.
right in front of your face. You can't get away.
I feel like one of those Germans who just stared at the Ark of the Covenant.
I will say it is fitting. It is fitting that Dylan Mulvaney's music video is auto-tuned.
Yeah, that's not true. Everything real. Is fake. So this song talks about calling all women of all ages. Girls like me gotta learn the basics. Monday can't get out of bed, so Dylan's depressed. Tuesday morning, pick up meds. Dylan's obviously on meds. Wednesday, retail therapy. Yes, you need a lot of therapy. Cash or credit, I say yes. Going into debt. Thursday, had a walk of shame, so you're a slut. Didn't even know his name. Yep. Promiscuity, slutty. So how many things, like, what is Dylan's view of being a woman? You're a medicated, depressed slut.
I mean, so that's the thing is, so when
really,
I saw this.
Really something to point to.
So when I saw this on Twitter, I was fortunate, number one, that it was a screenshot, not the video that you just forced us to watch. But that, this person had exactly that laundry list of, like, essentially, this is what they're trying to tell the daughters of America what it means to be a girl. Source, a dude. Like, this is insanity. They've got, like, you know, through 900 steps to get back to misogyny, right? Like, this guy's had to have surgeries and is drugged up to go back to being a guy who's telling women that you're a sex object who's expected to be terrible with money, get drunk and party and be left behind.
Yeah, no, it's
like,
just
that's
sick.
Now become like the progressive worldview. How did that ever happen?
No, it's a good point. I also thought like 20 into that.
It's good to laugh, right? I mean, it's good to laugh because it's just
what happened.
It's so dark.
Sure.
Now I have to say, so Dylan says this is he is celebrating his femininity here. Those are all trans people in that video, in case you weren't able to tell. Everyone there is a man. When I really looked at it, I just thought, I find Dylan offensive on a number of levels. And that's not to say all trans people are, but Dylan in particular is offensive. And I'm sick and tired of the days of girlhood, something about which he knows nothing. As a former girl myself, now a woman, and a woman who's raising a girl right now at the tender age of 12, I can tell you it is magical and beautiful and full of exciting openness and creativity and finding all things about yourself. And it can also be challenging and surprising and at points dangerous when you come of age and go off to college, all that stuff. And Dylan will never know anything about it because he's a man. He will never know the blessings that come with being a young girl who's coming of age and figuring out your place in the world, or actually standing up in a room full of men and being the one who knows more. That's a wonderful experience that Dylan will never have, male or female. And I hate that he keeps trying to drop himself into my gender, my sex, and try to give us lessons about what it means. He knows not the first thing. All right, guys, I stole the last word, but it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with me today and watching that last video.
Yeah, thank you for that.
And that would make a great State of the Union response. Just keep it in mind.
Oh my God. You get the greatest rating. No, it wouldn't. All right, lots of love, guys. See you soon.
Thank you.
See ya.
Okay, so I am off tomorrow unless this Fannie Willis ruling drops. Whenever it drops, we're going to be back for a breaking news show. So be sure to keep checking our feed. And thanks to all of you for watching us. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer, the ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic raised bed and garden soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.